a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Call the House Commerce Committee to order. I'd like to welcome everybody here today. I'd like to welcome those that may be listening over the internet. And a reminder to those that are here, we are on the internet. Everything you say will be, it'll be there forever. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I would like to remind everybody here today that your cell phones should be shut off. The sound in your computers, shut those off. Those are a distraction also. We are missing a couple of members here today. I know two of them have approached. They had to leave town today. They are excused. Representative Nygaard and Representative Krebs both mentioned to me that they had some things they had to leave town for this morning. So they will not be here today. At this time, I am going to ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Blake.
Here.
Fargan.
Present.
Greenfield.
Here.
Jensen.
Here.
Kirschman?
Here.
Representative Krebs? Nostrop?
Here.
Nygaard Pitts?
Here.
Solberg?
Here.
Solem?
Here.
Dreyer? And Rounds?
Here. We do have a quorum?
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Representative Dreyer should be showing up. He should be here. Good morning again, and this time I want to make a couple of introductions before we get started. This morning, sitting in the front row to my left, maybe to your right, is Alex Gosch. Go ahead and stand up, Alex. He is the intern, my intern, who'll be working with myself and this committee this year. A reminder to the members on the committee, if you have need some assistance on something, Alex is available. He does have some priorities, but he's available to help. That's what they're here for. They're here to gain experience, to learn as much as they can. Also present today, we have our LRC staffer. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Good morning. My name is Doug Decker. I've staffed the Commerce Committee last year and this year, plus numerous other committees in the 20 years I've worked for the Legislative Research Council.
And we also have our committee secretary, Diane Millen. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Thank you.
She is first-time secretary of this committee, so we will be moving along, kind of getting to know each other as we go. Also present today, we have in the front row our two pages assigned to this committee today. Could you please stand up and introduce yourselves?
I'm Caitlin from Gregory.
Matt from Sioux Falls.
And welcome you two. And their job, one of their jobs, is to hand out information that somebody may need handed out, whether it be somebody testifying or committee members. Right now, I'm having them hand out a committee procedure for the members of the committee, and it's a basic outline of our procedure during committee. It doesn't get into a lot of detail. The detail, especially for the new members, you will learn as you go. And for our former senator that's over here, he will learn that we do things the proper way over here instead of the way they do it in the Senate. Thank you. Most of you that I'm looking out have been here before, testifiers specifically. By the door, we have a sign-in sheet. I ask everybody who plans on testifying in committee to please sign in, and I will have the pages bring those sheets up to here so we can properly get the name spelled in the minutes. Sometimes there are some names out there that are difficult to spell, let alone pronounce. So please sign in as you come in. I want to run through some quick procedural things for this committee, just so you kind of have a basic understanding, and that's why I handed out these sheets. I kind of gave you the order of things as we run through them to start the committee for you newer members. I have a procedure I run through in greeting, in reminding people to sign in, reminding to shut off your cell phones, etc. The first real point I want to remind people of, all testimony, all questions, all answers are to be done through the chair, whoever that may be at the time. The chairman of the committee will run the committee. So if you have a question, bring it through the chair. If you have an answer, respond through the chair. Representative Dreyer, welcome. My vice chair is Representative Dreyer, and there will be times he'll be chairing the committee, and I'm going to have him chairing some bills, hearing some bills starting next week. I like to have the vice chair comfortable up here because you never know what tomorrow brings. I want him to feel comfortable up here. So whoever the chair is, they will run the committee. Basically, I did the outline of how we work over here. Most of you know that in the House, we do things the proper way. We'll have testimony from the proponents first, the opponents second, and then rebuttal if there are opponents to a bill. I'll allow some rebuttal, a minute or two, and then we'll have committee discussions, or committee questions, committee discussions, and then committee action. Final action on bills is a roll call, any final action. Amendments that we may have to a bill will be a voice vote. That is not a final action on the bill. So we will do a voice vote, and that'll be at the call of the chair, and if the chair is in doubt, we will then go to a roll call vote. Reminder to the newer committee members, specifically Joint Rules Chapter 7 of the Red Book. If you don't have a Red Book, try and find one. That outlines the basic motions that are made, and we'll be going through those as time comes on. We, Commerce Committee, generally has a very large bill load during session. Last year, we were up there pretty high as one of the highest bill loads. I would like to be started right at 10 o'clock, so when the gavel comes down, I want to bring it down at 10 o'clock. I would like to have everybody here on time. We're going to have some days where we may run a little late. We're fortunate enough that nobody uses this room after 11:45 when we're supposed to be out. There might be some days we'll go till 12. Depends upon the bill load, the size of the bills, but we'll try and get everything done on time. I have a note at the bottom of your pages you can read. I believe in family first. And over the years that I've been here, we've had a number of legislators either had an illness, a death, a birth in their family. If you have to be gone, if something like that comes up, I would rather have you there with your loved ones than here in committee. Let me know. In the meantime, if there is an important bill, something that you wanted to be part of and you know you're going to be back the next week, I can make arrangements to move that bill down. I will be very flexible until we get near crossover. Then we don't have a choice. But I believe that we're kind of a family up here, but your family at home is most important, and everybody has things that come up. Let us know if you're going to be gone. The two that aren't here today, they had things come up. They couldn't be here. They let me know in advance. This time I want to go around briefly and have the representatives that are here today. We have a lot of new ones in committee this year. Start over here with the new former senator, now representative. If you could identify yourself, where you're from, just move around the table.
Thank you, Representative Rounds, Mr. Chairman. As was pointed out, I am a recovering senator. I'm Brock Greenfield. I'm from Clark, and I dabble in business and do a little coaching back home.
I am Susie Blake, representative from South Dakota. This is my first term as a House representative.
If I may interrupt, please use the. I'm going to interrupt briefly. We do not have the high-tech gadgets over here that they have over there. I kind of like this. I got two buttons to press. Simple. Use the mic when you are addressing. Thank you.
I'm Darrell Solberg, District 11, House of Representatives from Sioux Falls. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to serve with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Roger Solem from Watertown. I'm retired military and businessman in the local community. And looking forward to serving on the committee.
I'm Representative Carol Pitts. I'm from District 7, Brookings, Volga, and Sinai. This is actually my third term, second consecutive term, but my first time on the Commerce Committee, and I, too, am looking forward to the diversity of this committee. Thank you.
Representative Brian Dreyer from District 32 in Rapid City. I'm a real estate broker and I'm pilot for the Guard.
Representative Phil Jensen from Rapid City, small business owner for 20 years, and looking forward to working with these fine folks.
Representative Pat Kirschman from Sioux Falls, retired baker from Sara Lee, and I've got labor experience. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mitch Fargin, representative from District 8. Last year I was on that side, and now I switched over to the good side.
Representative David Nordstrom from Aberdeen, and I'm a small business owner.
Thank you all. The first thing I want to do now after the introductions is to ask each and every one of you if you prefer to be paperless or have paper. We have laptops available, but some people like the hard copy of paper in their bill books, want everything delivered. And I'm going to have the secretary ask in a roll call fashion, do you want these available or are you going to go paperless? So if you could go through and just go through the lineup and ask paper or no paper, and please answer when you do.
Okay. Representative Blake.
Paper, please.
Okay. Fargan.
Paperless.
Excuse me.
Yep, paperless.
Paperless, okay. And Jensen.
Paper.
Okay. Greenfield.
Paperless.
Paperless, okay. Kirschman?
Paper.
Krebs Nostrup?
Paperless.
Nygaard? Not here, that's right. Pitts?
Paper.
Okay, Solberg?
Paper.
Solem?
Paper.
Dreyer?
No paper.
And Representative Rounds, I know you want paper. Yes, okay, so I want paper.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And just a reminder to leave your books at the end of the meeting. Leave them here, and we'll pick them up and bring them to your desk later.
Okay, thank you. And the name plates will also be left. Leave your black books afterwards, just a reminder. Okay, we're going to move on to our agenda, and let me explain the agenda as you see it in front of you. We have three bills up there, House Bill 1012, House Bill 1013, and House Bill 1014. These bills will not be debated. I do not want to debate them here. These bills should have been sent to the Retirement Laws Committee. And then since they've been assigned to this committee, we have to have some action on them. And I would like to therefore have each of these bills through action referred to the Retirement Laws Committee. To do so, that'll take a motion to refer them and a second, and then we would have to have a vote. We will have to have a roll call vote on those. So do I have a motion to refer House Bill 1012 to Retirement Laws Committee? Motion by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Dreyer, that House Bill 1012 were referred to Retirement Laws Committee. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Blake.
Aye.
Fargin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Jensen.
Here.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Krebs Nordstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard. Pitts.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Dreyer.
Aye.
And Rounds.
Aye.
Okay.
House Bill 1012 will be referred to Retirement Laws. House Bill 1013, I would also entertain the same motion to have this bill referred to the Retirement Laws Committee. Motion by Representative Dreyer, seconded by Representative Nordstrup, that House Bill 1013 will be referred to the Retirement Laws Committee. Any comments on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor will signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Blake.
Aye.
Fargin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Krebs. Nostrup.
Aye.
Nygaard. Pitts.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Dreyer.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye. House Bill 1013 will be referred to the Retirement Laws Committee. House Bill 1014, I would entertain the same motion to refer to Retirement Laws. Motion by Representative Nordstrup. Seconded by Representative Blake to refer House Bill 1014 to the Retirement Laws Committee. Any comments? Hearing none. All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Blake.
Aye.
Fargin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Krebs. Nordstrup.
Aye.
Nygaard. Pitts.
Aye.
Solberg.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Dreyer.
Aye.
And Rounds.
Aye. House Bill 1014 will be referred to the Retirement Laws Committee. Okay, before we get into our program today, those that will be appearing before us, I just want to cover next week's agenda a little bit. On Wednesday, we will have four bills at the top of the calendar or the agenda. Those would be House Bill 1008, 1009, 1010, and 1011. These were bills submitted by the Department of Revenue, but if you look in each and every one of those, they pertain to certain state taxes, of one tax refunds, certain state taxes, etc. These should be in the Taxation Committee. It's been discussed that we should also refer those. Since they weren't on the agenda today, I would prefer if we just take those up next Wednesday. So we will have those four at the top of the agenda. We'll go through the same motions to refer those to the Tax Committee, unless there is some question on that. But I believe they belong in the Tax Committee. That's what that committee is set up for. And then we will begin additional bills, hearing on bills on Wednesday. I am looking at, right now I'm looking at a Secretary of State's Bill 1018, Governor's Office of Economic Development Bill, House Bill 1030, and then we've got three Department of Labor bills for Wednesday, 56, 57, and 58. So we'll go through five bills next Wednesday. I would prefer having a little heavier load Wednesday, because Friday is usually a short day, so people like to get out. I want to try and get these five out of the way then. And I will try and have the agenda posted this afternoon, so everybody will have available to it over the weekend. This morning, I've asked a couple of different agencies to come appear before us. These are the people, the agencies that will be bringing a number of bills and will be involved in a number of bills that come before us. You'll be seeing a lot of these individuals throughout the course of session. I know they've pre-filed a number of agency bills, but then on other bills that come through here that are sponsored by either special interests or us, they will come appear either to testify pro or against. But these are people that will be here, and they're referenced people. They are in the business. They this is what they do. They are available for questions. I've always had a good association with them. If I have questions, they provide information and answers to me. So first I'm going to start off with a presentation by the Department of Revenue. If they would like to approach and identify yourselves, and the floor is yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Wiest. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Department of Revenue and Regulation. Secretary Kinsman would be here with us today, but unfortunately he is over in the Senate Taxation Committee visiting with those folks. We're going to have a little bit of a presentation by Merle Scheiber, who heads our insurance division, and Roger Navani, who heads our banking division. The Department of Revenue, of course, has the business tax portion of the department that collects taxes, but the folks that will come over and visit with you are on our regulation side, so to speak, and I want to introduce a few of those folks here today, if I may. For example, in our special taxes division, that's where we have alcoholic beverages, and I think we will have at least one alcoholic beverage bill. There could very well be more. The gentleman that you will in all likelihood see, and if he would stand, would be the deputy director of the special taxes division. That would be Matt Fonder. So you'll be seeing Mr. Fonder over here a time or two or so. We also have on the regulation side, we have the abstractors board of examiners. We don't think there are any bills with those folks this year. We also have the appraiser certification portion of the department. That is the portion that goes ahead and licenses the folks that do appraisals. And the administrator for that program is Sherry Brin, and Sherry's here today. I believe we have one bill that will come through the committee from Sherry. We also have, like I said, the banking division. The executive director is Roger Novotny. Roger has with him here today Tim Aharts, who is his deputy, and also Brett Oftal, who is the general counsel to the Division of Banking. And as I said, Mr. Novotny is going to have a little presentation here in just a moment. We also have within the Department of Revenue the Real Estate Commission. The Executive Director of the Real Estate Commission is Dee Jones. I don't think Dee has any bills herself, but she will in all likelihood be over here testifying on a bill or two or three. I guess we'll have to see how things work out. So that's Dee Jones. And on the insurance side of things, we have, of course, our insurance director is Merle Scheiber. Merle will be visiting with us in a second. He has brought along today Randy Moses. And another insurance person who will probably come and visit with you is Wendell Malsom. So that's kind of our insurance group. We do have other parts of the department that aren't here today, such as the securities director, which is Gail Shepik, and the Petroleum Release Compensation Fund folks. But that's kind of our regulation side of the Department of Revenue. And as I said, we have regulation. We also have the tax collecting side with our business tax division and our audit division. And also we have a motor vehicle division, the Division of Motor Vehicles. And obviously we also have, we dabble in real property taxes as well with our property tax division. So we're quite busy, Mr. Chairman, but we're more than happy to come here this morning and visit with you and members of the committee very briefly. And if you don't have any questions at this time to keep things moving along, I would just as soon turn it over to Merle Scheiber of the Division of Insurance.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions before we proceed? Seeing none, thank you. And I'd like to welcome Mr. Scheiber to the committee. He's a very familiar face for those of us that return. It's always good to see him here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Welcome. Welcome to a cold or a warmer pier, I guess, now. As Deputy Director Weiss did say, myself and also Randy Moses will be presenting the majority of the bills, and you'll probably see more of us than you probably care to, but we will be here. We have a number of bills that we're going to put on the agenda, and hopefully they, if they come across from that Senate side, we've kind of split the load between the two Commerce Committees so that we can be a little fair about it. I'd also like to introduce Melissa Kleeman from the Division of Insurance. She is our community monitor, so between Randy, myself, and Melissa, if you have a question regarding any of the bills that we're bringing forward or any needs, bullet points, talking points, whatever that we present and stuff like that, we'll be happy to get those for you. So I am Roel Scheiber, Director of the Division of Insurance. I do not know if you have a copy of our annual statement in front of you, and there it does have what the Division of Insurance actually does. I will not go through all those duties that we do, but simply state that we do have like several divisions, seven actually, within the Division of Insurance that entail licensing and continuing education for our insurance producers and also our companies. One of our more important sides is our financial solvency division. We also have a complaint division, an enforcement division, legislation division, which is Melissa, Randy, and myself. We have an insurance fraud unit that Andy Fergal does head up. And also we have rates and forms review of the different insurance companies as they file their auto, commercial, property, whatever rates or forms happen to be. This year, we do have 14 bills that the Division of Insurance, the agency itself, is bringing or sponsoring forward to the two Commerce Committees. In those 14 bills, we try to have five primary goals that the Division of Insurance has, if I may. They're to protect the public interest, promote competitive insurance markets, facilitate the fair and equitable treatment of insurance companies, and promote the reliability, solvency, and financial solidity of insurance companies. And we do have one bill that's going to address that particular goal. It's called an unauthorized insurance bill that we'll get into at that time. And then also enforce state regulation, insurance regulation. So, of those bills, the Division of Insurance does have a number of cleanup bills on an annual basis. We try to stay ahead of the game between federal regulation, state regulation, and insurance company needs that we feel are important to the five goals that I just mentioned. So you will see a number of cleanup bills with us. So the 14 aren't all controversial or are going to, Mr. Chairman, a lot of opposition to most of these, but there will be some, obviously. But the cleanup bills are necessary for us to keep up to date with what's going on in the insurance climate. And as you all know, the financial industry, insurance is by I don't know, by association, kind of guilty with what's going on in the nation right now. So we also have an employer assistance bill that you may have seen the press release from the governor, and we will elaborate a little bit more about that, but it's to help small employers basically with special needs that they do need. We have solvency accreditation. The South Dakota Division of Insurance was awarded its financial accreditation award to the NAIC, which stands for National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and that's very important for us. That helps our domestics when they have to have an annual exam in a state that they are not domesticated in, like Iowa, et cetera. So, and the rest of our bills are going to range from health insurance, group life, work comp, and some licensing issues. So at that point, we try to, before we bring the bills before you, we try to work with industry. We try to hammer everything out. It doesn't always work, but we're pretty good, I think, in trying to work with industry. And before we get to the table, we have usually hammered out with the opposition or proponents what we intend to do and what we present for you. So we appreciate that. Anything that you guys need, we'd be happy to provide for you so that you can understand the bills. Some of these do get kind of lengthy, the insurance bills, so if you have trouble sleeping at night, there's one in particular this year that's going to be pretty lengthy. You'll want to read that one. So, but outside that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand by if there's any questions.
Thank you. Does anybody from the committee have a question to Mr. Scheiber before we move on? And feel free to ask questions. That's what we're here for. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Roger Novotny, the Director of the Division of Banking and Executive Secretary to the Banking Commission. If I could, Mr. Chairman, could I do a handout?
Sorry. Yes, you may, and you've got the pages right behind you there. We can put them to work.
As I get older, I need something to follow.
And we don't have, like I said, the high-tech gadgets over here. We don't have the big screen, so we do things the old-fashioned way.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to spend a few minutes with you this morning in an area where there is unprecedented challenges and unusual changes that are taking place in our country. And I appreciate the chair giving me a few minutes to kind of bring you up to date as far as your state banking system and some of the things that we're working on. I'll give you a little background on a few things, and I'll walk through this as quickly as I can, Mr. Chair. If I get too long, please pull the hook on me. And the pages are numbered, so I'll reference the pages. On page 2 is just really a background document for you to let you know who serves on the Banking Commission. They're highly experienced individuals in the financial services industry. And down at the bottom are the three contacts that Deputy Secretary Wiest introduced. Tim Ahearts is really our expert in the bank examination area and bank arena, and Brett is our licensee, trust company, and division attorney. So feel free to ask any of us any questions during the session should you need more information. The division is only going to have one bill this year. It's a bill that was really mandated by Congress in the mortgage licensing area. It's called the SAFE Act. You will be hearing from that next week, so I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Brett has spent hundreds of hours on that bill with members of other staffs around the country and HUD. So he'll talk about that next week, so I'm not going to spend any time walking through that particular bill today. I'd rather spend my time talking a little bit about what's going on in South Dakota and who we regulate and what we're seeing occur in both the economy and our banking system. On page 3, it really is a split page. The left page tells you who we regulate and who we examine. The right page really says how we are funded. We are not funded with general funds. We are funded by the folks that we regulate through a fee assessments. Really, the banks are the critical element that we work with, both in the, I call them traditional, non-traditional banks in South Dakota. We have a wide range of financial institutions from large credit card type banks, international banks, all the way down to a small ag community bank that may have only $10 million in assets. So our examiners deal with a wide range of company types, and the training that they have to undergo is just incredible. But the banks are just critical to South Dakota, and they've done a good job in good conservative face-to-face lending. We are not in a crisis mode in South Dakota, and I will pat the banks on the back for keeping us out of the problems that the rest of the country is faced with at this point in time. These banks will lead us out of the mess we're in at some point in time. I'm guessing the next 24 to 36 months is going to be pretty tough throughout the country and even in South Dakota. And we are closely monitoring all of our institutions. We do something that's called a red flag report every 3 months off of the UBPR reports filed with the FDIC, and we look at the banks very closely, call them on the phone, and look for issues that they may be challenged with. I just want to reassure the public and the legislature that things are being closely monitored by the examiners and the Division of Banking. And last year, this committee and the Senate passed a new banking law, and that has actually been implemented very favorably, Mr. Chair. I know you were involved with that, and it's gone well. Page 4, on a more national basis, I think sometimes people don't know who their banks are. And this kind of breaks down the type of banks in the United States in total. As you go from all you have to do is go over to the right column. 72% of the banks in the United States are state chartered and are regulated by state regulators like myself. 19% of the banks are national banks and 9% are thrifts. And there's going to be some moving and shaking going on over the next couple of years, how those numbers appear. But I'm guessing that you're going to see more national banks move to the state charter, and the national banks will be your big babies, the Bank of America, Citibank, and Wells Fargo. The next page, page 5, really is kind of is another chart that's the same information, only in relates as it relates to assets. And I think it really does help demonstrate for you folks what's happening in the United States in reference to the too big to fail. It shows that while we had 70-some percent state chartered banks in the country, we only have 28% of the assets in state chartered banks, and it shows the tremendous concentration of assets in the banking system within those national banks. 60% of the assets are held by those institutions. And when you have companies that are like that, they really do become too big to fail, as we have witnessed. And I worry that the federal government and sometimes the Beltway think that our banks are too small to care about, although I already think that they're too important to ignore for our communities in South Dakota. The next page, page 6, is a national perspective from the FDIC, Problem Insured Institutions. As you can see, the trend. It's no secret. If you've been watching the news, there are more problem institutions through September. I know that at this point in time nationally, we are well over 200 problem institutions in the United States, and my counterpart with the FDIC, who has been assigned full-time to Washington to work on closing banks, is saying that number is going to go higher yet next year. Fortunately, in South Dakota, we are in good shape with good conservative bankers. And one additional comment for the public's purpose: remember that your deposits and your checking accounts are covered by FDIC insurance in the banks, and that's an important thing that sometimes people forget about. There is protection. Page 7 for the new members just gives you a background of how we examine banks. We have cooperative agreements with both the FDIC and the Federal Reserve. We rotate exams with them from year to year, and at times on the large institutions we're all involved, we may have up to 30 examiners involved in some of those examinations. They are good partners. We always aren't on the same page. We have a little different perspective at times because we represent the local communities more. On page 8 is really a snapshot of the history of your state chartered banks, and we've had some shrinkage in the number of banks, as you can tell, from 2002 to 2008. The number of assets continue to grow. I'm anticipating we will still see that growth with the report that's being filed in January. I don't anticipate a large change in the number of assets. New reports that are coming out right now will be interesting to look at. On page 9 is really the balance sheet for the banks in South Dakota, our state chartered banks. If you look at the numbers, a couple of things will jump out at you in the right column. The return on assets, as you can see, has diminished some in South Dakota, and also non-current loans have gone up. Now, there's always a story behind the story with all numbers. Well, I would be concerned about that, and I'm a paranoid regulator, so I'm always concerned about stuff like that. The story behind the story is if you extract the credit card banks from those numbers, they are comparable to prior years, and we are favorable in reference to the Midwest and what's going on with the other state banks, like in North Dakota and so forth. So this paints a little darker picture than what really is occurring in our community banks. Page 10, just real quickly, we do charter and examine state chartered trust companies. That area has been growing. I'd go to the bottom bullet point on that page. The Governor's Trust Task Force looks at the trust laws every year. They get together with a group of about 20 experts, and the group is chaired by Lieutenant Governor Dugard and Senator Knutson. They do a very able job in winding their way through some very technical law every year to make sure that we are neither getting too far ahead nor too far back in that particular area of law. And you will see some bills, I would imagine, this session from that trust task force. Page 11 is just a summary of the growth in that industry. It's something to watch. Obviously, when you are in the regulator mode, when we look at something like that, when you see those numbers change like that, that's risk. When you see it go from $12 billion to $44 billion, and we have to examine that stuff, it's important that we keep our arms around that, because that's a lot of money. When there's a lot of money, strange things can happen. I would anticipate in 2008, where the question mark is, you will see a shrinkage in assets in trust companies. If their investments are anything like mine, they're not going to have $44 billion in their trust companies anymore. page 12, just as a summary listing of the other licensees that we deal with, money lenders. So for the new members on the committee, would it be everybody from payday and title lending all the way to GMAC and Honda Motor Credit Company, furniture store lending, grain bin lending, and those types of things. That would be the money lenders. Mortgage lenders, brokers, and originators are all licensed with us now, and then that's an area that you'll see on the next page is really shrunk. Money transmitters, a good example of that would be Western Union, and we passed a brand new law last year that gets us up to speed. We had a 50-year-old law, and we've updated that completely, so that was a good event. On page 13, really is just a demonstration of how the numbers are moving in reference to those licensees. When you look at the mortgage industry, you can really tell the shrinkage that occurred from 2006 to 2007, and that would be the green, the blue, and the light blue lines. You can see that those have, the blue lines, the blue chart. You can see that those shrunk dramatically in 2007, a little bit of recovery this year. But to show you how much it has shrunk with the impact of a new law that was passed by the legislature in 2007, we were anticipating where the gray line is. There are 526 mortgage originators. The industry was telling me to anticipate 4,500. So that gives you a scope of the mortgage problem that the country's been faced with and how that industry has virtually collapsed at this point in time. I will predict that they will rebuild their business models and we'll see them grow back up within a few years. And I'll just cover the crystal ball stuff real quick because I know there's a lot of topics being thrown around the legislature as far as what is happening in the economy. And these are just my perspectives and what we're seeing in our bank examinations and from the banks. The key things that we are seeing are the unemployment would really drive our train a lot. We are concerned about that and what will happen there. Both inflation and deflation, I think we could be faced with a little bit of both of those. The mortgage arena, we are fortunate in South Dakota. We have not had a lot of foreclosures, and I think there were some news releases last night saying that we're the best in the country. And that's good. That's representative of good mortgages being written to people that can pay them. We didn't get a lot of exotic mortgages in South Dakota. But if you look at the unemployment that's occurring in South Dakota, I would be a little bit wary about where that whole thing is going to go down the road a bit. On certain interest rate environments in the country, as you all know, we are virtually dealing with a Fed rate of zero for all practical purposes, which is unprecedented. One thing I did not have on the list, I think the stimulus package is critically important to our state and to our banks. And I think rebuilding confidence in the financial system is going to be really important over the next couple of years. The second bullet, agricultural economy, that has saved us. They've carried the water the last couple of years. They did it again this year. I'm anticipating that they'll be able to do so again next year unless something major happens like a drought. That would be a bad deal for our economy. Ethanol has obviously been a big player. The last bullet on page 14, preemption, expanded federal regulation. I think it's important for members of particularly this committee to understand that there is going to be a great move underfoot in Washington, D.C. to preempt your authority to regulate financial institutions like banks. It's already underway. There's a lot of tug and pull going on. There's a lot of academics that would like to see all of the regulation done by federal regulators. That fight has already started. I know the National Conference of State Legislators have engaged in that and are concerned about it, and also NGA and also the organization that I belong to. That would be a tragedy for South Dakota if we did not regulate our state chartered banks and those were completely regulated by like the OCC or another federal agency. We would lose complete local control. And it's important because banks can talk to folks like you. It's more difficult on a D.C. level. So watch that issue, and I think that will continue to play out over this year, but it's a critical thing to our state. The last two bullets on the last page are obviously there every year. And with that, Mr. Chairman, the last page, if you get bored, if you're not bored enough reading Merle's bills, you can go to these websites, and there's a lot of information out here. I would actually suggest sometime in the summer you cruise through some of these websites because they are very educational. If you go to the FDIC website, you can actually drill down into bank performance by bank, look at their balance sheets, understand what kind of business your bank is in, how they're doing. I think that's not just important for committee members, but also citizens to understand how their banks are doing in their area. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Dreyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one quick comment. The last comment you made, I think, is important because there's a lot of fear in Rapid City right now that you're going around with the Hamilton debacle and tens of millions of dollars that the banks are losing now, and a lot of people are afraid some of the banks are going to fold in Rapid City. So I think that's important to stress the strength of the banks in Rapid City right now and that there's sky isn't falling, and we're going to get through it. So appreciate that.
Any comments? Any further questions? Representative Solberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You stated that the stimulus package is very important for us and the state. How and how will we survive that increased indebtedness?
Mr. Giovanni? I wish I was an economic expert to be able to tell you that. If I had those type of expertise, Mr. President Obama-elect would be calling me. I think it's so big, Representative Solberg, that it's hard to tell how that will all shake out and what type of debt will be there for our children to pay long term. But right now, we are in a mode in the country where a stimulus package probably to have the economy recover is essential.
Follow up? Okay. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate
it. Session.
Does that conclude our...
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the Department of Revenue and Regulations presentation. We thank you for your time.
Okay. Are there any questions we may have from anybody within the Department of Revenue? Any, maybe something we haven't covered? Seeing none, I thank you for being here today. We will be seeing a lot of these folks in and out of this committee, so thank you for the presentation. Next on our agenda is a presentation from our esteemed Department of Labor. As I've mentioned a couple of times before, we are not high-tech in here. They're bringing in the old-fashioned screen, I see. At this time, I would ask Madam Secretary, Secretary Roberts, welcome to House Commerce Committee.
Thank you. I've got to mute this before I start.
Now, just a reminder for those Department of Labor folks coming in, we are under the no cell phone rule in here. I know you were just coming from a meeting, so just a friendly reminder. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pam Roberts. I'm Secretary of the South Dakota Department of Labor, and I'm really happy to be here to meet the folks in the House Commerce Committee. It's the committee, actually, that the department deals with on the most regular basis. So we have very few bills this year that we're bringing, but you never know what will come from others, and so, you know, you'll probably be seeing us throughout the year. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the department. Let me get organized here. First, our mission statement. And our mission is to enhance the South Dakota workforce by providing businesses with employment-related solutions and helping people with job placement and career transition services. So we help not only the employees, the workers of the state that are looking for services, but also the employers that are looking to find workers and find a skilled workforce. We just updated our website. I would encourage you all to get on the website and check it out. That's the new homepage, but we really like our enhancements. They, I believe it's quicker and it's easier to read, and it really is a good barometer of all the services that we have out there. So feel free to look at our website. As we started the year, we in March kicked off a Workforce 2025 project, and that was basically as a result of discussions with the cabinet at a cabinet retreat right after Governor Rounds was newly elected for his second term. And the Workforce 2025 program was developed because we all recognized that there was going to be a need for more workers as the baby boomers started to retire. In 2015, we're projecting that there's going to be 90,000 fewer workers in South Dakota. And so those demographics are just kind of frightening and shocking. And so as we went around the table, it actually came up as one of the top priorities of the new administration to start focusing on workforce services. As a result of that, we established a workforce subcabinet, and the Department of Labor leads that subcabinet. And then the other members are, well, now Tom Oster, it was Rick Melmer, Tom Oster, Secretary of Education, Tad Berry, who's the Executive Director of the Board of Regents, Rich Benda from the Department of Tourism and State Development, and then myself, who leads the cabinet subchair or the subcabinet group. And if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, I would really like to just show us a 7-minute video on Workforce 2025. And I think rather than us going over and having slides and talking, it's such a good all-encompassing video that if you wouldn't mind taking the 7 minutes, I would like to show that video.
Proceed with the video.
Okay, thank you.
I would appreciate it.
Extraordinary Grand Peak in the Black Hills of South Dakota became an extraordinary symbol of America thanks to a ready and living workforce. Sculptor Gutzon Borglum couldn't have achieved this monumental dream if he didn't have the right people with the right skills. Borglum needed 400 men and women to drill, to blast, and to chisel the features of four American presidents. Every morning for 14 years, they climbed 700 steps to get the job done. Mount Rushmore National Memorial stands today as a lasting testament to the hardworking people of our state. In South Dakota, big businesses thrive and small businesses grow thanks to the citizens of our state who believe in a hard day's work. But how do we inspire our young people to stay and build their careers within our borders? How do we attract new people to fill the jobs we already have? How do we bring home those who have left our state? How do we, like Borglum, achieve our South Dakota dream? By working together, by planning, by being innovators. That's why the South Dakota Department of Labor, the Department of Tourism and State Development, the Department of Education, and South Dakota Board of Regents have partnered and developed the Workforce 2025 edition. This group of state entities is working together to create five unique programs that are aimed at helping South Dakota businesses attract and retain qualified employees. You can help change our state by participating in these Workforce 2025 programs, which include Dakota Roots, Live Dakota, Grow Dakota, Dakota Seeds, and Build Dakota. Together, we can build a brighter future for our children and grandchildren. Dakota Roots was established to encourage people who have left our state to return home to their South Dakota roots. This innovative online program connects individuals interested in moving back to South Dakota with career opportunities located within the state's leading businesses. In just its first 18 months, over 2,000 people expressed interest in Dakota Roots. Nearly 400 actually began employment and moved their families back to the state. Businesses who partner with Dakota Roots are also benefiting from the program by attracting qualified employees without spending vast amounts on recruitment. South Dakota has a quality of life that is second to none. Our wide open spaces, low cost of living, and boundless opportunities make the land of great faces and great places a great place to live. But how do we convince our young people that home is truly where the opportunities are? That's the objective of Live Dakota. This new awareness marketing campaign is aimed at educating Generation Y about the career opportunities located within our borders. This multimedia marketing effort by the South Dakota Department of Labor will work to retain our young people and inform them of the rewarding careers that exist right here at home. The South Dakota Department of Education and the Board of Regents are working to prepare students for tomorrow's workforce through the Grow Dakota Initiative. As part of this initiative, teachers and principals will be provided a vision for the 21st century high school to help make learning relevant to the real world. The High School 2025 framework will develop relationships, provide career exploration opportunities, guide 21st century learning, and define the 21 components which will make South Dakota high schools great. Dakota Seeds is a program that is working to provide positive on-the-job training for South Dakota's young people. Partner agencies and the Governor's Office of Economic Development are currently working to increase the number of internships and assistantships in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The goal of Dakota Seeds is to provide students with real-world experiences and help companies develop a base for potential employees. Carving out a
qualified workforce is only possible through strategic partnerships with the state's leading industries. In an effort to build these partnerships with South Dakota companies, Build Dakota Action Teams are holding forums across the state to identify South Dakota's workforce needs. State leaders and private enterprise are working together to brainstorm proactive solutions to keep existing industries strong and meet the needs of new and emerging sectors in our state. Build Dakota Action Committees will take these ideas and formulate next steps and strategies for addressing key issues facing South Dakota. Workforce 2025 is a statewide initiative that is working to engage business, education, and state government to work together. Today, we lay the groundwork and begin to fashion the features of a qualified workforce. We clear away the challenges. But like the carving of Rushmore, it will take time and commitment of many. We need leaders of our business community to participate, to respond, and to climb the stairs to get the job done. We need you to help make our visions real. Working together, we can achieve our own lasting testament to the hardworking people of South Dakota.
As governor of the state of South Dakota, I'd like to thank you for your help in making Workforce 2025 successful. Working together, we are making South Dakota an even better place to live, grow, and build.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think that was such a good synopsis. I hope that it was okay. Of all the efforts that we've really been putting all of our resources in the Department of Labor towards this initiative, as I remember back a year ago, we were starting to develop this program, and we launched it in March. And I met, you know, during session, different towns come into town, different communities come into Pierre to meet with you folks, and I have an opportunity to meet with several of those communities. And the big word I got last year was, we just need more workers. There's not enough, you know, we need some more trained workers. The numbers are not there. And, of course, with our demographics, you could see that we needed to take some steps. I actually met with a group from one community that just said, we don't want any business development in this community anymore. We don't have the workers for the businesses that we have in this community. It wasn't long after that. In October 19th, I actually went back to that community. They invited me back to talk about, you know, the way the program was going and how their community was doing. That's, those same community leaders told me that they were now no longer hiring. And that was really the first time that we started seeing it in the Department of Labor, that the economy in South Dakota was actually changing. Even in September, when we were getting word from the national economy that things had, you know, things were not good, and our budget office was talking about how, you know, they were seeing things coming in the future. In the Department of Labor, we were still getting people in September, businesses in September saying, you know, we're booming here, we have a lot of jobs, we need more workers. And at that meeting on October 19th was basically the first time that the community said, you know, we're still hiring people if they're really good, but we don't have like 200 announcements anymore. We're being very selective. And I hate to say it, but today some of those same businesses are doing permanent layoffs of staff. So things have really changed in the last year. And so as a result, the Department of Labor has really had to change a lot of our focus. We're continuing with Workforce 2025 because we see that as a continuing need down the road. But basically in the last 4 to 5 months, we have changed our recruitment hat and more put on the dislocated services hat, helping those workers that are losing their job. We have an unemployment insurance program, and I have all my directors here that I want to talk about our programs. So with that, I just wanted to give you just a little quick picture about the Department of Labor. The majority of our funding, we have our budget hearing on Wednesday because we are not a generally funded agency. Most of our funds come from the U.S. Department of Labor through federal unemployment insurance taxes and other funding sources. So, and many of our programs and the rules of what we do come from the U.S. from the federal government also. So. Over the past several years, that has been a bad thing because we have taken many, many cuts in our programming over the last several years. But with this new stimulus package, there's some funds that are possibly coming now to the department because, you know, our workers here in South Dakota and nationwide are needing more services at this point. I want to introduce at this time Dick Flemmer, who's our director. And Dick, I'll just have you stand up if you'd like, or Is it okay, would you like him to come to the mic? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Flemmer. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Labor. Administrative Services, we procure supplies, equipment, office facilities. We have a fiscal unit where we take in the money and we pay all the bills. Big part of our responsibility is the department budget. For the last 4 years, as Pam said, we've been kind of in a maintenance mode. We've reduced about eight FTE department-wide. That's 2% of our staffing. We've reduced our operating expenses by $2 to $3 million in the last 4 years. As Pam said, we receive about $38 million. Well, we have about a $38 million budget, of which $36 million come from federal grants and contracts. We get about $800,000 in general funds, which are used to support our labor and management division for state labor law activities. And then we get other funds that support our boards and our workers' comp automation. Our federal funds have been reduced somewhat, but pretty maintenance mode. Our 2010 budget, when we turned that in last August, we had a 4.5% national unemployment rate, and we just put in a maintenance budget. The only increase in our budget we requested was the governor's salary policies. Well, things have substantially changed since then, obviously. National unemployment rate's gone up to 7.5%. The bulk of our money's come from federal grants and contracts. The stimulus package that was just introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday, and I believe it's part of President-elect Obama's stimulus package, I think it's $800 million, almost $1 trillion, has substantial increases for labor programs, you know, to deal with jobs, deal with the unemployed, retraining of the unemployed. So down the road, we see significant changes in funding towards the department. We will spin out of a maintenance-type mode and actually receive more funding as it relates to the unemployed, retraining, things like that.
Okay, thank you. Secretary Roberts may be able to answer this. I know the stimulus package is just beginning to make its footprint. Will there be some strings attached, as I so to speak? Will we be looking at some changes to match the federal requirements maybe next year or down the road here?
We actually just visited about this at our executive team meeting this morning. The things that we're seeing is, from the training side and from our employment services side, they look to be block grants so that we can provide services to workers. On the unemployment insurance side, there might be some strings to get additional money into our trust funds. And so we're monitoring that as soon as we're putting together some plans, actually. And once it passes, because we feel like it might pass during this legislative session, we may be back. So just stay tuned.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Did anybody else have a question of Mr. Flemmer? Seeing none, go ahead.
Just quickly, we're located, our central staff, there's about 50 people that are in the Knight building. I'm on the third floor of the Knight building over here. If anybody wants to stop by and visit, be sure and do that. And then we also have an office up in Aberdeen that staffs about 114 people. And basically our entire division of unemployment insurance, we have some field tax people in unemployment insurance that are out in our local offices throughout the state. But the bulk of our activities on the unemployment insurance side are right in Aberdeen in our office there. We also have a local office that does worker services in Aberdeen. And also our Labor Market Information Center. Our Labor Market Information Center, I'll let Marsh and my deputy talk about them since they're under her, but they establish the national or the statewide unemployment rate. We do all of the surveying to get the worker numbers, you know, the number of workers here in South Dakota. And then where are we located? We have 18 local offices throughout the state, and we have about 185 people that work in these local offices throughout the state. And at this time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Mike Ryan, who's our Director of Field Services. Actually, we have 15 managers that report to Mike that handle these local offices.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm the Director of Field Operations. My name's Michael Ryan. Over this last year, we have put together some information on how many services that have been made available to individuals, as well as the job orders, how many openings there were, and job seekers, as well as the percentage of individuals entering employment. Who provides these services? Our manager in Aberdeen is Dan Thielson. Our manager in Brookings is Jeff Genstead. In Huron is Robin Wallum. In Madison, Jim Balser. In Mitchell, Gene Anderson. In Mobridge, Marge Mertz. In Northwest area are Watertown, Sue Bogan. In Pierre, Mark Anderson. In Rapid City, Penny Kuntz. In Sioux Falls, Greg Johnson. In Spearfish, Lisa Johnson. In Vermilion, Dan Hart. In Winter, Lynn Coonrod. And in Yankton, Barb Kabaisman. These are faces that you'll see in your communities. They are the providers of the service for your communities. And if I could take from what Pam had indicated, in September of this year, we were moving along in a progression of employers seeking employees. But based on the national economy, things changed. And in October, the national economy caught up with the state of South Dakota. And to give you an idea of where we're at, last year, the same day last year, we had 11,452 job openings across the state of South Dakota. As of today, we have 7,244, a significant drop, and the significant drop occurred in the last few months. We switched from working intensively with employers to get employees. We are now in a mode to work with those employers and their employees that are being dislocated. We are gearing up for the services for those individuals affected by a layoff to transition into other employment. To provide this, we do a rapid response that is a general overview of all the services that the Department of Labor can offer an individual. And there is a multitude of services available to them. And that's a general overview for them so they can pick and choose from this menu of services that at a later date make an appointment with our career or with our local office staff and sit down and start working towards reemployment. Also, we have geared up what we call the Job Search Assistance Program, where we're looking at a group of individuals that have been employed for many years. Many of them have been employed for 20, 25 years, to assist them to that next employment, that next career that they're looking at. We give them resume writing, interview techniques, how to fill out an application. You have to remember, many of these folks have years of employment and have not filled out an application or developed a resume for many years. So we assist them that in that process. Also, we give them a training on best interview techniques and tactics. And we also prepare them for other referrals to other programs that are available through the Department of Labor. We are still working very closely with employers. A case in point, in Aberdeen, we had some machinists laid off. Morris is hiring some machinists. So we are getting the managers that information, yet that the very same day, so we can work with those dislocated workers to make that smooth transition, because these folks want to work. They're very aggressive in their interviews and seeking employment. With that, I don't want to take away from any other program.
Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, what were the numbers that you gave just a little bit ago as far as those that you helped transition from unemployed to employed?
The numbers that I had given were the openings that were available throughout the state of South Dakota, and I'll repeat those, 11,452 the same date last year. This year, those job orders or those openings are 7,244.
And Mr. Chairman, the next couple speakers will have more information about the number on unemployment and things like that.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of the employers that I met with back in October that were starting to feel the crunch were manufacturing, and I can see that. As Mike said, we work so closely with the business community. When there's a business, for instance, we know right now of upcoming layoffs that the employers have let us know so that we can start gearing up to prepare to service their workers that we really aren't announced. You know, it's up to them then to announce at the time the layoffs come. Back in October, they started being it's really a lot manufacturing that has been impacted the last several months. I hate it when I start getting layoff emails, but my managers start sending me the layoff emails, and they started about mid-October. And I got to tell you, I get two or three a day right now. And again, it's a lot of the manufacturers that are feeling the hurt right now. But the concern is as manufacturing feels it and lays off workers, retail is going to hit it and a lot of the other sectors of our economy. But manufacturing, as they tell me, it's the national folks are not ordering from us. And so it really is a reflection of the national economy also. So just want to make that point. Next I have Don Katke, who's our unemployment insurance director. Yes. 10 minutes. Okay. That should be fine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Don Katke. I'm the director of the Unemployment Insurance Division. And just to give you a quick picture of what's going on in that division right now, as Secretary Roberts said, my division is in Aberdeen. Really have three operating groups in that division. One, an employer group that works with employers and collects the unemployment contributions. Those monies all go into a federal trust fund that sits in Washington. A benefit payment group that takes claims from unemployed workers, and those payments come out of that trust fund and go to those workers, and then sort of an internal audit group that looks over the other two to make sure things are working right, claims are paid properly, and so on. A little further indication supporting what Secretary Roberts and Mike Ryan said, the workload that we see for unemployment insurance claims, first of all, these claims all come into a call center in Aberdeen. We used to have people come into our local labor offices and sit in, out in the offices and wait till somebody helps them. Now they come into our call center. Last year, January through September, we took a little over 11,000 new claims. Those are people calling us to saying they're off work. In the same period in 2007, we took about 12,000 claims. So we're looking around saying things are good in South Dakota. Unemployment's low. And then in October, things started to change. This October, we took 1,800, which is 30% more than last year. These are new claims, people calling us. November, 2,700 compared to 1,800 the year before, 50% higher. December, almost 5,000 compared to a little over 2,500 the year before. So almost 100% higher than 2007. So you can see the trend line going up significantly. The unemployment benefits paid in December this year, almost $4 million compared to about $2 million a year ago. So that's what we're seeing. It's continuing. In the week that just ended, January 3rd, we paid a little over $1 million in 1 week compared to about $500,000 last year. our call center that's in Aberdeen, they're getting about 300 calls every day from workers right now looking to file claims. We've got another benefit line that question calls. People have questions where their payments are. They're getting about 500 calls. That call center is normally open from 8 to 4:30 every day. About 10 days ago, we had a day where the phone lines in the call center filled up within less than a minute of when we opened, that much demand, people calling us. To address that demand, we've extended those call center hours till 6:30 every night. We've trained one person that we reassigned them to another, to duties in the call center out of a different area in the department. We have two more people we're training right now to reassign. We're adding telephone lines. Those will be installed a week from Saturday. And we brought back a temporary person that's retired. So what we're doing to address that demand from the public, adding capacity, more lines, adding staff, that people that are, we're taking them out of other areas and reassigning them to the call center. In terms of, to conclude, the trust fund, the unemployment trust fund employers pay into after the recession of 2001 and 2 got down to about $19 million. A solvency package was passed 3 years ago. That brought that fund up to $24 million in 2007, up to $25.5 million in 2008. So we're going into 2009 with $25.5 million in that state trust fund. I mean, we can peg the revenue pretty well. Unemployment claims are very unpredictable. You know, it's an educated guess to know how many claims we're going to get, but we're fairly comfortable going into the year that we're in trust, in pretty good shape with that unemployment trust fund. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Katke? Are there any questions? Hearing none. Okay, we'll move on.
James. Next, I'd like to introduce our Director of Labor and Management, James Marsh. In maybe just a minute, James.
Okay. Yes, I'm director for the office. It's basically the legal arm of the department. We supervise five administrative law judges that handle workers' compensation cases, labor cases, and unemployment appeals cases. So we see the fallout of some of the increase in claims you're seeing. We also have a wage and hour investigator that deals with daily claims if employees are not being paid. We have a human rights investigator that deals with employment discrimination, housing discrimination. And if you have daily calls about workers' compensation issues, you can address them to Bonnie Ackerman in our office. I guess I call her kind of work comp triage. She deals with the daily calls. And we provide legal support for these states' boards and commissions that we, the department, takes charge of, which you'll hear about in a minute. So that's us.
Thank you, James.
Thank you. Questions?
And then the last person I'd like to introduces Marsha Haltman, my deputy secretary, and she's also the director of workforce services. She wears two hats, and I'd like her to talk about workforce services.
Thank you, Pam. Good morning. I am Marsha Haltman, and the Division of Workforce Services, the common thread of all the programs within that division is we connect individuals with training opportunities, and you'll see that connection with the programs I'm just going to quickly list for you. First is our Labor Market Information Center, which is housed in Aberdeen, and they are tasked with gathering all the data. They do the job trend projections. They track training providers, unemployment rates, all that information, so individuals can make informed decisions about what their best choice may be in the future. Another division or part of our division is technical services. There are computer support staff. They actually maintain the job database program that individuals can search online and check for job openings, and employers can post jobs. Another program is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, which is a TANF program. Again, that is a work first program. The sole purpose is trying to get families into employment that will allow them to be self-sufficient. We also have workforce training programs under the Workforce Investment Act, and during maybe regular times, the goal of this program is to make sure that individuals are going into training, are prepared for training, and then that training is going to lead them to an occupation where there's actually a demand and they're going to be able to make a decent wage. Right now, the focuses of that division are on our dislocated worker programs, and we actually, the state staff that are in this division are the program experts that then help the field staff deliver all the programs that Mike talked about that his staff are doing on a daily basis. our rapid response staff right now. If we hear about a layoff, large or small, state staff and local office staff will actually go to those individuals impacted by that layoff and provide immediate services to them. A little bit of coaching and counseling on what the future may hold, how they apply for unemployment insurance if appropriate, and how they can get into a retraining program immediately. For instance, this week, we just yesterday hosted two meetings in Sioux Falls for Hutchinson employees. There were about 275 employees that were laid off. We held two meetings off-site. State staff and local staff were there. They visited with these folks about all the services available to them, and then the second step is to actually invite them to our local office so they can have some one-on-one assistance as they transition into something different. That happens on small communities, too. We also had Alcoa Manufacturing and Elcester recently laid off some individuals, and one of our smaller offices did a smaller one-on-one rapid response for those individuals impacted, so we can get right into those communities and provide the services that are needed. And we do adult basic education, again, is within our division, and those programs are focusing on basic skills for adults to get them into the workforce, to get them into training. It's a pathway leading to the GED program, and they also do English as a second language. So it's sometimes a surprise that labor has such a strong educational component, but when you think about it, it's very natural that when we're talking about workforce, we're talking about a trained and prepared workforce, and that's the role of many of these programs, to assure that people have that solid background so they can then be self-sufficient.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Well, Representative Blake?
Marcia, how do you deal with, when you're talking about training people to get them into a new job, but there aren't going to be companies looking for 275 people? What's happening? I mean, how do you handle that? Or how, what are you doing with people on that?
And that's obviously the challenge and why it's nice that we have all those resources available. Within the state, I think there still are opportunities for individuals, but we have to look at that information. What exactly openings do we have? And what background skills does that person have that will maybe translate into something similar? They may not be able to go into the exact same field, and that's where our training dollars actually come into play. You might not be able to walk in tomorrow into a new position, but how can we train you to prepare for something that does exist now?
Representative Blake, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any
other questions? And if I could just follow up, if you know, remember that we are planning for this bubble to pass through, and we'll be back on course of trying to, you know, with the number of jobs that we had before the recession hit. We have 7,000 currently open right now. So, I mean, there is some opportunity, and we are finding that in Sioux Falls and some of those communities that people are having an easier way back into the workforce.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, that's really the end of our comments. I hope that we gave you, it was a brief overview. I hope you kind of understand what the Department of Labor does. We have about 400 people statewide that work in our department. If you need anything, feel free to give me a call or email me. I'm around all during session. To my right is Dawn Dovery, who's our public information officer. She is somebody also that could help you. If you see her in the halls of the Capitol, grab her and ask her for anything that you need, and she can get it for you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That pretty much wraps up our agenda today. I thank Department of Revenue and Department of Labor for being here today. A lot of information in a short period of time, but as the session goes on and as you get a chance to talk to these individuals, things will begin to flow a little more easily, and you begin to comprehend what all they do. Do any members of the committee have comments or questions? The agenda will be posted this afternoon, hopefully be out, so over the weekend you can look at it. As I mentioned earlier, we do have Department of Labor bills coming up on Wednesday. I think we have three of them. So.
We have a budget meeting at 10 o'clock on Wednesday.
Well, thank you for that information. We may have to change that in the next few minutes. And I see Department of Revenue still here. We can talk about it. Any comments? Hearing none, the chair would entertain that most favorite motion.
So moved.
Motion by Representative Solberg to adjourn, seconded by Representative Fargan. Any questions? Non-debatable. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those nay. We are adjourned.